Oh, okay. We're good for now? All right. Okay. Hey there. My name is Brent Allison, and I'm a graduate student at the University of Georgia majoring in what's called Social Foundations of Education. Does anybody know what that is? Social Foundations of Education is basically the social studies of education. We study, like, the history, the politics, the social structure, the economics, and so forth regarding what are the foundations, the social foundations of what shapes education and what it is, why it is the way it is. That's what we do in a nutshell. But I'll talk a little bit about how this paper came to be. This was actually an assignment for last fall semester in my multicultural education class, and I wanted to take a new direction in how multiculturalism was going to be analyzed. And since my interest back then was hackers or computer hackers and their educational considerations, figured it would be a pretty good topic. Usually you want to do stuff in your first year that you're going to be doing stuff for your dissertation or your thesis if you're a master's student. But since then, hacking actually probably won't be on my dissertation. Probably do something on a quantitative survey research level regarding Asian Americans and their views of filtering software, for instance. But this paper is probably was presented at Freaknik last year. Any of you aware of what Freaknik is? Like, not the Atlanta Freaknik, the Nashville Freaknik. That one. Spelled Phreknic. And this is the second time around I'm presenting this paper. One, because a lot of you weren't there. And two, this is going to be the last time because this is pretty dated research. And I think after this, unless I want to revise the paper, I think I'll probably put it to rest and probably talk about something else at these panels. Anyway, first, the way I want to revise what I did in the presentation last time is I had just an old PowerPoint presentation. I'd kind of go point by point by point. This time, I want to have a little bit more audience participation, and I'm probably going to throw out some questions and see what you can add to what this paper is, because this paper isn't a static text. It can be modified. It can be transformed. And it's up to the readers, i.e. you guys, to do a little bit of the transformation. So I'll start with this first question. What's the things that people usually think of when the word hacker is said? Yes. Do what? Viruses? All right, let me write that down. What do people think about hackers? One, you got viruses. What's another one? Yes.
Programming
with a soldering iron. You know, I had a computer science professor. The way he used hacking was not the way that I ever heard it used. It was that when you hack, you just type on the keyboard randomly and you just try to figure, you hope through trial and error that you'll get the program right. I always heard of hacking as either one, you know, just these kind of script kiddie virus spreading kind of fiends who go around to damage networks, or two, a very skilled programmer, not an unskilled programmer. So that was a new, actually I'll put that, programming with a soldering iron, or we'll put unskilled programming. Oh, really? The way I would picture
hardware hack?
Oh, okay. The way I would picture programming with a soldering iron is that you use a soldering iron to kind of patch up stuff that you got wrong the first time. Okay.
Hardware versus coding on a generic PC, you've got something like your specific laptop and you're actually hard coding at the interface level of your BIOS of your particular laptop that you're typing on.
Okay. I want to keep like definitions consistent with what the people are trying to propose. So we'll put hacking with hardware, and I'll even put a third one, just something I just thought of from my old professor, was unskilled programming. What else? What else do people think about hackers?
System break-ins?
Okay. What else? We're talking about the popular conceptions of hackers, what people think of when they hear the word. Thieves. Liars, cheats, criminals, etc., etc. Actually, I misspelled thieves. It's kind of embarrassing. I before E. All right. Okay, these are the stereotypes.
Online game cheats.
Oh, we got another one. What?
Online game cheats.
Online game cheats. That's a good one. Online game cheats. Anything else? Do what? People with no wives. 14-year-olds. 14-year-old script. We'll combine all this. Script kiddies with too much time on their hands. All right. Yes.
If you're going by the perception that's in the movies, they got to always wear cool clothes, too.
Okay. Snappy dressers. I know. Did you? It was like, how many of you saw the movie Hackers? Do you remember? I mean, it was like, it was almost if it was art imitating life imitating art. In other words, it was like in the future, you had writers like Ray Bradbury saying that people would wear these type of clothes. So automatically the hackers in the movie think, well, we have to automatically wear these kind of clothes, right? So that's the art. But then again, you're having an art imitating a life imitating an art. So it's kind of this weird conundrum of what you're trying to accomplish. Something doesn't really make a lot of sense. And I don't see, well, y'all look respectable. So, but I don't see anybody like wearing, you know, $300 muscle kind of shirts. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Situation irony.
All right. We've got a hackers movie hacker over here. All right. Anymore to walk in, I'm definitely going to be stand corrected, but anyway, you can probably follow along with me in the paper. The thing about it is that with multicultural analysis of how hackers are operating, you know, multiculturalism comes from the academy or academia, universities, and so forth. They always use the term hacker to describe, even though they might say, we acknowledge that the word hacker, as it's been used in these 10 points that we've listed, is the popular usage. We have to use it the same way, too. But also, you have to keep in mind that, well, like, who else are hackers? Like, not, let's get off public perceptions. Who is most likely to fit who might actually be a hacker? Just
security,
like shape, size. Oh, yes.
Security professionals.
Okay. So okay. What we think of? Yeah, what we think of hackers here. Let's see. Is one security? I'm a lousy speller. What can I say? Security professionals. All right. Do what? Computer pioneers, especially say around from 1950s to say early 1980s. Yeah, early 1980s. What else do we fit? Reverse engineers. We've had one guy here who wanted to say something. What is it?
Well, the canonical example of the hacker that I can think of in everything you've ever read about him is more or less true. I've met him in person. Alan Cox, jack of all trades, terrible dresser, bad beard, likes spicy food, and gets his hand on every piece of hardware or software you can possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think of when I think of hackers.
So you could say someone who sheds social conventions for the love of their art. Could you say that?
No, I wouldn't
say
anything.
You wouldn't say
that?
Okay.
Sounds like a bunch of crap.
Okay.
That's a sociology statistic.
Yeah. Okay. We'll just put down what you said. We'll say someone who doesn't care about how he looks. Okay. Well, if you want me to like put down word for word, that's cool. Jack of all trades, computer programmer.
Because in this field, I mean, it's very difficult to get really wide exposure to a lot of the different subclasses. And, you know, someone who's been programming for a year or two, maybe they can get really good with some little aspect of it. But when you start getting to someone who can just pick up any random protocol, any random application, and go with it, run with it, that's what I think of.
Someone who can just go with it. Okay. All right, what else?
Police?
Yeah. Okay, explain that.
The police break into systems consistently. They may go after criminals, so they'll have to break into their system, trying to gain some information, whether it's encoded or, you know, they've destroyed some information. So they, you know, they actually have police officers who work specifically on trying to break into systems.
So you say police or those who gain information about malicious crackers?
Well, they're searching not just crackers, but they're searching for criminal activity. So they could be going after number runners. They could be going after drug dealers. And they go after their systems.
Okay.
Well, they're still hacking into the system. He's asking what other people who hack.
Hacking with governmental permission.
It's still hacking.
Not quite.
What's going undercover is a perfect example of social engineering.
Okay. Anything else? Nothing else? Well, think about just like the shape and stuff, not just like who the hacker is internally, but like who would, if you could say, oh yes, you got a point. The technologically curious. What does it mean to be technologically curious?
You're given something, you find something, you want to know how it works.
Okay.
You tear it apart.
Know how something works. Okay. Want to and do know some know how something works.
Of course, use the term they always use for educational purposes only.
The standard okay. Disclaimer.
So you could say someone who self-educates himself?
Yes.
Okay. Put that down there. Educates him or herself. Of course, we have a lot of female hackers, too. Not enough. That's kind of what I wanted to lead to. If let's just concentrate on, say, phenotypes, just, you know, general appearance or like social class. Who's probably going to fit into who's going to be a hacker? Do what? I can't hear you.
Sandra Bullock.
Sandra. Okay.
Sorry.
All right. But no, like, think about it, though. It's usually going, like, I don't know, look around the room. I mean, a lot of you, I assume, would probably call themselves hackers. Kind of look around, and who do you see? Geeks. Well, I would say, would you say it'd be fair to say that hackers are basically the programming-oriented type of geeks? I mean, geeks cover a very broad ground, but it's like, you know, narrowly, you could say hackers just one subset of geek. Yes.
There's a tendency when people are talking about hackers, and I'm just going to go off on the side tangent here, but to start trying to get in this fuzzy little inclusive, oh, well, you can be a hacker in biology, and you can be a hacker in mechanical engineering. And I would argue that the first real stab at when people started applying this label to things, they meant the sort of person that dreams in code and what this does to your mind and your behavior from pretty much that point on in your life, because you start thinking of everything else you run into algorithmically, and it does shape your social interactions. And then, yeah, you come up with neat little hacks, but to turn around and say, well, anybody who does something clever in some other field, I really think that that's sort of stretching the terminology. Now, as it becomes more mainstream, like any word in English, it will grow into a more global word. So the question is, what did it originally mean when coined, and what is it growing to mean?
So you could say that you want to stick to a strict definition of what hackers are supposed
to
be.
No, I'm just saying that the fact that there are disparate meanings and that it is an evolving scenario, you know, it's like in the evolutionary arguments when people bring up form versus kind, these are just words that people apply. When we say, well, what is a real hacker? The real question is, what do we want to call one? Because we know what the original people meant, and the original people, if you couldn't program on bare metal, well, you were just right out. And pretty much most of the people in the room, I guess, would probably say that that's a bit extreme. But at the same time, do we want to take someone who is, you know, can come up with a clever protein folding
approach in biochemistry and say whether or not this person is or is not a hacker? That's a question that we really have to pose, because, I mean, if everybody in here is vaguely interested in computers, this is pretty much where the culture comes from and where the culture goes. So, we have external perceptions, internal perceptions. Mm-hmm. One of the questions we need to ask is, what do we want the word to mean?
Good point. Actually, I kind of go through that, and I'm actually trying to define hackers on page, is it page 2, 3? Yeah, it's probably around, you'll see the heading, the hacker subculture, on probably the third page, if you count the title page as the page. And it says that, like many ethnic and sexual orientation groups, deciding which persons actually fit within the definition of hacker is wrought with ambiguity. You'd probably agree with that. That, you know, I mean, there are so many definitions of what hacker is, just externally and internally as well. You know, but also we have to go through it not just from that scale, but also through time and space. Do we want to go through the 1950s MIT definition of hacker? Or do we want to go through, say, even the 1970s version of the phone freak as hacker? That's something that's pretty, I mean, you know, you can go either way with it. You can say someone who calls him or herself a hacker may, in fact, have their identities decided for them by those who consider themselves to be hackers and non-hackers, internally, externally. But unlike other groups like, say, African-Americans, Latinos, Chinese, and whatnot, they enjoy more of a set parameter for classification, but what exactly a hacker is hotly contested by academic literature, government affairs, academia, and especially the hacker culture itself. I mean, look at how, say, for instance, the federal government has defined hackers over the course of even just the past decade. I mean, ordinarily, you know, we've gone from, say, in 1990, having the Secret Service raid a 2600 meeting in Washington, D.C., to now the FBI speaking at Dragon Con and even trying to recruit new members. Any of you have been to Dragon Con? I mean, not Dragon Con. Yeah. DEF CON? DEF CON. Like, I was at DEF CON 2000, actually. And I'm still astonished that even though the FBI came in, they still kind of came in with the definition that hackers are still these malicious beings, but at the same time, maybe we can tap into the maliciousness and maybe find a few quote-unquote good apples. And just the way that they would go and present themselves in their panel that I saw, it was just more of, you know, we've got all these cool tools. You don't need all this kind of illegal crud or whatnot and whatnot. But, you know, I think in a lot of ways the FBI and a lot of the other federal agencies are still pretty confrontational when they're trying to approach the subject of hacking. But at the same time, there's this grudging sort of acceptance that maybe we're going to have to employ these people who may or may not kind of fit in with our ideology about what law enforcement's supposed to be all about. Actually, if this gentleman has his hand raised over here.
Isn't it more the society's choice? I mean, well, that's what I mean. The hacker society is really the one who creates what a hacker is, not really the outside people. Because it's like people will sit there and talk, oh, I'm a hacker, and they're script kiddie. If you ask a hacker, you know, there's a difference between being a script kiddie and a hacker. And so isn't it within their own society that they define themselves?
Well, sure. This is what's really weird about academia and the way they treat hackers, is that ordinarily in the academy, when you're trying to do multiculturalism, you always accept the definition that the people within the group themselves give themselves. But when academics are talking about hackers, they're going to use the external definition to define them. And I think in some ways they might do it because hackers tend to be largely white, suburban, and male. And because of this, there isn't this kind of sense that maybe we need to give these people a sense of cultural determination that they would give other groups, but they don't want to give that to hacking groups. That's part of the reason. And also another reason, I think, is just they're basically very misunderstood, and they're very understudied in a lot of ways.
Isn't that, that's like a prejudice that is saying that, okay, a hacker is a, you know, from a middle class, white, you know, socially inept background, whatever.
Well, that's it's the norm, but it's certainly not all encompassing.
But that's the thing. It's not. It covers a wide variety of different cultures, not just Americans. I mean,
oh, certainly, this is a global culture,
and
absolutely,
from many different types of backgrounds. And for us to define it, isn't that like, you know, wrong?
You mean just for hackers themselves to define it? Or just like hackers to define it?
Not hackers, for society, outside of hacking.
Well, sure. I would say that
what do we think of hackers are? And if you ask a hacker, he will probably tell you something totally different from what we just set up there on those first 10 points.
Oh, sure, sure. But at the same time, you probably think, I mean, anthropologists, they're the ones who are usually the ones that go into a group and they immerse themselves in the habits of the group. What was once familiar becomes strange, what was strange becomes familiar. And they kind of adopt some of the attitudes of the group and they write their report and research based on the attitudes of that group. If I was going to do a qualitative study on hacker culture, I would have to immerse myself within the hacking community. That's the only way that I could do justice to studying the group. So yeah, you're right. I would have to agree. Yes, we have some other hands. Inches, which other?
Referring to your previous comment about law enforcement agencies and government agencies and their definition of a hacker, I would think the question of the verbiage there would be more of like a legal term. So what they operationally use is what they think of as a hacker is going to be a legal term defined by a criminal code. Mm-hmm. Like the difference between being medically insane and being legally insane. So I think when you deal with somebody in law enforcement or somebody in a government agency that is talking about a hacker, they're probably talking about what they come into contact on a daily basis is going to be the legal definition of a hacker as opposed to what they might realize what a hacker would call themselves or the hacker subculture or something like that. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, there's
so you're saying that causes a lot of confusion?
I'm just saying it's probably a gross oversimplification to say that law enforcement sees a hacker as this, where it might just be something they're working with operationally for legal reasons, where they might realize that there's other hackers out there that don't fit into that narrow legal genre. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, they're not so silly or stupid to think that, you know, every single person that, you know, puts their fingers to a keyboard and writes code or whatever is going to be a criminal.
In other words, give law enforcement authorities a little more credit in how they actually try to deal with the hacking quote-unquote problem.
Well, I think it's an interesting disparity between the definition. It's going to be a legal definition as opposed to something that would fit all the categories that we're discussing. Like the difference between being criminally insane, you can be, if you could tell the difference between right and wrong based on McNaughton, I mean, you were legally insane or legally sane. But at the same time, I mean, you could be a raving schizophrenic, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, there's a difference. Based on your perspective or your paradigm, your definition is going to be different, which is obvious. I mean, that's why we have so many different opinions. But I'm saying, when you talk about the government idea of what a hacker is and what Hollywood's idea of what a hacker is, they're going to be different because they're looking at it from a different perspective. It's obvious, but I just think it's an interesting side note.
Actually, just a question. Has anyone ever read, like, legislation dealing with hacking? Do they actually use the word hacker in some of the bills?
There's no way to define the word hacker legally. I just don't think it can be done to define the word hacker legally. It's all computer crime and all that other stuff.
So if they don't have hacker written in the bill, maybe...
No, I doubt that very seriously.
You were saying something? Okay. But anyway, maybe you could say they don't write hacker in the bill, but maybe at the same time, maybe when they say unauthorized computer usage, it's just automatically assumed, oh, hacker. So, yes.
I think one of the interesting problems that we're facing here is, well, the programming of culture is predominantly in English. The culture of programming is predominantly an English phenomenon, simply because this is really where coding got started. Most languages, most operating systems are written in English or based in an ASCII character set. And so even other cultures, other countries that get involved in programming, you usually have to have at least passing familiarity with English to really go very far with it. This is becoming increasingly less true, but it's still largely where the culture is based. So you have a large group of English people or English-speaking people, and you have the development of subclasses in them in this new realm of operation. And basically, if you look at various indigenous populations, native populations, when they don't have exterior forces, when they're trying to refer to themselves, they have some word meaning, you know, it basically equates to identity. People who are like me usually gets translated to the people. And if you ask this group of people over here, who are they? they'll say, well, we're the people. And if you ask those group of people over there, they'll say, well, we're the people.
They're always the default.
Yes. And if you ask these guys over here who they are, they'll say, oh, well, they're the enemy. We're seeing a similar problem in the development of hacking culture. If you say script kiddies aren't really hackers, but you look at the sudden blossoming of online availability, and you know, strong argument to be made that there are more script kiddies than there are what we would consider traditional hackers, and if all of them are calling themselves hackers, what do you say to that? And you really just have to start saying they're subcultures, they're sharing the same words. This is incredibly confusing matters, and it takes time for words to evolve and for words to develop. So, you know, we're all sharing English, we're all starting from the same default space, but we're trying to define a couple of disparate subcultures inside of computer use. You know, there are people who really want to identify themselves as the raving lunatics of the net that go around breaking into things. This is how they, this is where their self-identity attaches to. This is who they want to associate with. This is what they want to brag about. They're everything Hollywood wants them to be. These people do exist. At the same time, there are people who read Knuth until 3 in the morning, try and figure out what the hell he's talking about, and go and work on their sorting algorithms. And they also have this strong self-identity. You've got the people who just like reading user-friendly all day long and talking to chat rooms, and they also have a strong self-identity. And we're trying to say, well, who are they? And you have to subdivide who you're talking about. Because as soon as you say, well, what is a hacker? You get into the question, well, what is a hack? And there are hundreds of definitions.
Sorry. Good points.
Too much caffeine.
That's okay. I saw a few other hands raised. Did you have a point? Go ahead.
It's following the same point, I suppose, is that right now the definition of hacker is so much in flux that it's hard to say what you mean by it. To use, say, cars as an analogy, when we say hacker, we might mean the equivalent of a shade tree mechanic, whereas when the police say hacker, they mean a car thief.
That's true, too. Actually, let's kind of go on another tangent here. Of course, this was a paper about education and hacking. So, first of all, how would you describe your school experience? How was school for you? It sucked. Okay. Number one, it sucked. We survived. What else? Yes.
Professional network security company, and I'm still in high school, and I'm going to graduate. Person who hired me didn't complete his freshman year in high school. Other guy that was a co-founder dropped out of tech. It just doesn't matter. It's mostly insignificant to people who become fascinated by things that they can't get experience with in school.
So you would say
insignificance, the bottom line.
Insignificance.
Yeah.
Or just insignificant. All right. What else?
One of the things that I'm seeing right now is with the growth of homeschooling is the fact that our current educational system is very broke. It has no clue whatsoever what the real world is and what people need today as far as an education to be able to work in our society. We are now in a high-tech society, and our current educational system is still working with a 50-year-old definition. But one of the other gentleman said here, insignificant, because the people who I'm hiring, I'm a system administrator, and the people I'm hiring, virtually none of them have a college education because what I need, they don't teach.
Okay, so you'd say ill-preparedness?
Yes, of the education system.
You're right. Ill-preparedness of this system. All right, what else? Any others?
I'm going to have to disagree on that one. Yes, we're living in a high-tech society. I don't want to sound elitist, but I don't care how good the education system is. Most people will never be programmers. It requires, and this is from cognitive research, it requires a visualization ability, you know, the ability to hold visual constructs in your mind that most people don't have. This comes down to, you take any random sampling of people off the street. show them a collection of furniture, show them a room, and get them to optimally arrange the furniture in the room. Most people can't be interior designers. It sounds completely absurd, but the skill sets strongly overlap. You need a strongly developed visualization subsystem in your mind to be able to do this, and better education doesn't make that happen. You know, you're never going to get more than, I mean, even with incredible education, you're never going to get more than maybe 5% of the population that will ever be good enough at programming that it, that they'll be able to do anything significant with it. And to try and base an economy or an education system off of a model of capability that isn't realistic is doomed to failure. The best thing you can hope to do is base an education system that identifies people who can and teaches them. But this gets into really nasty political issues as to what do we do with people who, I mean, you're showing preferential treatment to individuals based on ability. The education system, do we find these 5% and single them out and give them special classes and spend special money on them? Or do we try and do our best for everybody else based on the assumption that the 5% of people that are going to sleep through class, that are going to be smarter than their teachers, will just sort of take care of themselves and we don't have to worry about them. And we just sort of should try and avoid letting them get themselves into too much trouble while they're going through the school system and sort of make sure there are books nearby. You know, it's a complicated question because they're going to take care of themselves, and it's really expensive. I mean, it's incredibly expensive to try and provide anything approaching adequate education because you're going to need instructors at the middle school level, at the elementary school level, at the high school level, that have their level of capability and education. And there's so few of them already, you're going to say, okay, well, let's take a percentage of all the hackers that are actually going to show up as a result of in the population, and let's just make them elementary school teachers and pay them at that level. So you can't really expect a solution there. You're going to have to come up with some more out-of-band approach to identifying and educating hackers.
Well, the issues you bring up are going to go down to the fundamental issues of what's education supposed to be about in the first place. A lot of what you've described was actually things Thomas Jefferson had debated with himself about the way that he wanted people to educate. Did you ever hear that he wanted education to be able to glean the jewels from the rubbish? Is how he would describe it. The thing about it is the jewels were usually those that were already a fit within the aristocracy and always already have the means towards education. And the rubbish is the rest of us. So, well, the thing is, but you're saying that maybe there are just some innate ways of thinking that cannot be taught by schools. But at the same time, since schools are set up so that people can reach their potential for those advanced levels of thinking, it creates this quandary of what do we use schools to identify or do we use schools to try to uplift everybody? Is that a fair assessment of what you're saying or did I miss it?
Exceptional physical ability and make sure that they have special coaches to make sure that they can, you know, they can get really good at track or they can get really good in sports to send them on to a professional job there. I mean, it's roughly equivalent. When you're trying to prepare them for a job market, you're better off spending your tax money going for the common denominator, going for what most people will be doing. And at the very least, perhaps identifying people with exceptional needs and pointing them in the direction of something outside of the school system. But I don't think that just for financial reasons, any school system will ever be able to pull out the special ones and give them the treatment and the nurturing. And because they do have exceptional abilities, they'll often have disabilities. It's a side effect of how gifted people come about. The extra protection that they would need to get that sort of education. It's too expensive.
Well, it also raises the question about how giftedness is acquired already. I mean, we can really go into some kind of some self-defeating prospects if we automatically assume that some people are just kind of gifted and some are not, whereas there are very high correlations between the reason people are being gifted or they come from an advanced socioeconomic class, they come from an English-speaking family and such. I mean, of course, you're always going to find very bright minorities. You're going to find bright people who don't speak English but can, you know, hack away and program and whatnot. But usually the correlation, I mean, correlation doesn't always equal causation. But at the same time, it kind of makes you wonder that if we already have kind of a limited mindset that people are just going to be gifted anyway, we kind of have to ask our questions, what makes people gifted? Sometimes it might be heredity, but in a lot of cases it's environmental factors too. And when we address that, we say, what are the implications for schooling? And when we go to the implications for schooling for this, maybe we can create a system to where everybody can at least advance, and that we don't have to always have a bell-shaped curve in which there's only going to be a few people at the top, everybody in the middle, and somewhat some at the bottom. That might always be true, but you try to devise a system, at least it's just my opinion, in which everybody can, because everybody can have the equal opportunity to have advanced level thinking. Maybe not necessarily hacker type thinking. Maybe they can be, I mean, this goes back to what hacking is in general, what the definitions are of that. But at the same time, it doesn't have to be hacking that makes somebody what we would call a successful person. There are so many multitudes of ways. I mean, this goes back to the question of multiple intelligence theory, is it just analytical intelligence that matters? There's also spatial intelligence, emotional intelligence, kinesthetic intelligence, and so forth. And then we have to go to these questions of why is society valuing some intelligences over others? This isn't really something that can be resolved in an hour-long discussion, but I think it really can ask us some questions that we can think about later on. Yes, you've had your hand raised up.
Just going back to the original question of how would you describe your school experience and defining, I think, in a more simplified aspect of what he was just saying is the structured education that we have is very boring for the creative mind. And hackers or artistic people, you know, it could be many different types of people, but structured education, at least for while I was growing up, was extremely tedious and boring, and it turned me off, and I'm sure it turns off a lot of other people, which is why they say, hey, you know what, I don't need that. Because they'll go out, if they have that drive, which is what they do, and which is what they're not being taught, so their goal is to go over here, but education says you must go here first. And they're saying, no, I want that.
So you feel as though some of the boredom stems from a certain direction trying to be forced upon you and trying to go against the grain of what you feel you need to accomplish in life?
Yes.
Yeah, there's also ways the flexibility of the curriculum that's in question, too. I mean, you know, this goes way beyond whether or not we're going to have a state-controlled or national-controlled curriculum. Do we have a very local curriculum in which the population that's being served of it is one? And it kind of goes and says, do we have a curriculum? I mean, there is something to be said about set curriculum and a common knowledge that everybody should have in order to go into the world. But, you know, first we have to agree on who the common knowledge is, and also whether that common knowledge is worthy. So, okay, we got another question.
Okay, going back to basically what a school experience does for intelligent people, I think it does less to shape their intelligence because intelligence can be a natural innate ability. I think it goes more to shaping their darker aspects.
Oh, explain that.
School does not teach critical thinking, and without that, then morality does not take root either in intelligent people or average.
This is interesting. There's a correlation between critical thinking and, say, a moral education?
Yes.
Okay.
When you have to be able to evaluate right and wrong. The other thing is, put in that situation where they teach not morality, merely obedience, intelligent people rebel.
Well, you could also say that, well, this is something interesting too, is that not only do intelligent people rebel, you could also make the argument that it's only those who resist against the system in very overt ways. I mean, this is like social reproduction versus resistance theory. And the theory is that schools reproduce the social structures and the racial structures and so forth within the school of what is in the society. But you also say those who resist overtly, but then again, it's kind of a self-defeating prophecy, is that if they're resisting, they're obviously no good. But you can also say that within the resistance, maybe they can find other ways to resist. The intelligent ones would, so that they could work within the system, so that they could actually change a lot of things that, you know, make it oppressive. I mean, you know, it's just, I'm playing devil's advocate here mostly. I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying or anything like that. But it's more of, how is it that we think about intelligent people rebelling? If they're really intelligent, if they do rebel, but they know they might, what if they're, you know, defeated, or they just kind of re-perpetuate the stereotype of themselves as, well, you know, those people who rebel, they're already no good, so we don't have to really pay attention to them anyway. That's another way to look at it, too. So, yes?
Given the question that we have with the experiences, after elementary school, for me, everything started to go downhill. I think Montessori school is the best way to go through high school.
Montessori school?
Yeah.
I've got a friend you need to meet, but go ahead.
Because in Montessori school, you're learning at your own pace. You set your own schedule, and you learn what you want to learn. And with the structured schooling that we have now, you're forced to learn what they want you to learn. Even if they say that you get to choose your own schedule, you have to choose within what they want you to take. So you get to choose of the lesser evils, basically, instead of doing what you want to do.
Okay, so forced learning, little self-determination. Would that be fair?
Well, that's what they're forcing on us. Because in a Montessori environment, you have to have the self-discipline and the determination to do your work. And you can choose what you want to do.
Okay.
But
okay. You only put like Montessori below that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or see. Dewey.
Montessori slash, yeah, Dewey's like the very most quoted person for who would be called sort of a bidirectional learning. Instead of it being teacher-centered or student-centered, it would be both centered upon the communications between teacher and student. The teacher would act as sort of a guider or coordinator rather than someone who just tries to spew out a curriculum. And hopefully, you know, the students can do a data dump on a test. Yeah, so put Montessori, Dewey as antidotes to this. All right, we have some other hands raised. Yes, you haven't spoken. Oh, he was first? Okay.
Nobody's really mentioned it yet, but it might have just been where I grew up, but there was a fair amount of violence involved in my schooling. You're the geek, you're smart, you're an outsider, that kind of stuff going on. A lot of people take it, they get beat down, they graduate, and they move on with their life. Some people don't, they snap, they crack somebody over the head with a chair. But, you know, for better or for worse, a lot of intelligent people suffer through, you know, a great deal of violence in their high school years.
So I say a lot, but from other students?
Yeah, of course. The faculty, you know, wind students up in jail for that. But
faculty.
Exactly. My favorite story is I got threatened by, you know, three or four big guys on the football team to go downstairs to the vice principal and tell him, you know, these guys said they're going to beat the hell out of me. He sends me back to class. He's like, don't bother me, you know, that kind of stuff going on. And you've got to deal with that, you know. It affects you. You're asking how school affects you, how it comes across on the more intelligent, you know, stereotyping hackers as more intelligent than the, you know, common people. That's my input on it, you know.
Yeah.
There's another factor a lot of people don't look at because nobody wants to talk about it.
Well, you're right about that. I mean, the strange thing is, this is a problem I've had with academic study of education, is that when we talk about education oppression, it's usually the oppression that the system places upon students to control and direct their thinking, to put them into a place, a predetermined place that they're supposed to be for the rest of their life. But oppression in school, they usually don't tackle bullying. They usually don't talk about how other students are going to oppress that single out student. And I'm really surprised because in a lot of ways this is obvious oppression. But at the same time, I think academics like to concentrate on what's not so obvious. And sometimes they do that at the expense of the obvious. So, yes.
I may be a little bit older than a lot of people here, but your problems here with schools is nothing new as far as when I went to school or what it is now. You had the gangs when I went to school. You got the gangs now. You've got different people. What people miss the point on is, you can do all this stuff, but can we afford it as a society? You make a living and you're paying 40% of what you pay in taxes plus Then you got to pay sales tax and all this. What you need to understand basically is your high school, your first 12 years is a basic education. It doesn't matter whether we like it or we don't like it. Somewhere down the line, you have to learn your basics, and that's your first 12 years. And if you want higher education, you want to be stimulated, you want something else, it's called college. And that's something we don't understand as a society right now. I don't need to be in schools teaching people to be computer experts in the third grade. Maybe learn a little bit of the basics. But if you want to be a hacker or anything else or learn computers, college is where you do this. So we're putting too much emphasis on the first 12 years.
Yeah, we do that. And unfortunately, in some ways, the university kind of compensates for what might have been missed in those first 12 years. There are a lot of people who are taking English 100, and they usually teach some concepts you might have supposed to have gotten in junior and senior year, for instance. We're about the only country in the industrialized world which expects their citizens to go to school this long. Usually when you go to a university in, say, Europe or Japan, you're being there for career preparation and nothing else. The sort of broad liberal education, which, I'd have to agree with. I have a degree in history, my master's in education's in history and so forth. And, even what I'm doing now, it's all about the broad liberal education, which is really unique to the American experience. There's a lot to be said about that. But at the same time, we focus on those first 12 years because it's where everybody goes. But I think as more and more people go to college, and that may be especially to, say, two-year tech schools where they're trying to catch up a lot of the stuff that they should have gotten in high school, that'll probably be more of a mainstay of the focus that K-12 is now. Yes?
Yeah, I think that a lot of the problems is with schools, they have a board, basically, an education board, and they set the standards of what the students are going to learn, and a lot of times they don't consider creative thinking or skill sets such as programming or computers in that. And a lot of times the schools can't afford financially to bring in land, computers to teach the students, and a lot of times they do not have the teachers available. Why would I want to go teach high school people how to do computers or how to program when I can go out into the industrial world and make a good living and not have to put up with dealing with students and dealing with a lot of the political issues that have to go with high school? And I think that's why a lot of times they do not concentrate on different skill sets in high school or middle school or elementary school.
Oh, sure. You've got plenty of teachers who are still scared to death of the technology that's being used. But not only that, we have so much. We are unique in the Western world in that we have such disparities of funding between school districts. Some of them just don't have the access to the technology, and if they don't have access, you don't see computers around, and there's just kind of an attitude of, why should I care? Especially if you're a student, and even if you're a teacher or administrator. So it's kind of a vicious cycle that it kind of feeds into. All right, another hand.
I have a few comments. First of all, you were saying that it doesn't matter in high school, that it can wait till college. The majority of emails I get from kids interested in the hacking freaking scene is about 14. So, if you don't give them an outlet at that age, then they're going to, take it off into something probably negative. If you give them more of a positive outlet when they start to show interest, then that could be, grow into something really neat.
I think this kind of goes back to the way that I think we ought to handle the problem of where do we stop at the basic and where do we start when they critically think about the basic. Why not both while they're going through the system? Why not, as we teach the basics, we keep on asking the how and why questions of why the basics are in place as well? You can ask yourselves while you're learning arithmetic, why is it we're applying arithmetic? Where did arithmetic come from, and so forth? We have really a patronizing attitude, I think, in education, is that you learn basic, and then you go to the advanced level, but only a select few are going to choose to go to the advanced level as well, too. So, all right, can we get another hand?
I wanted to say one more thing real fast. Another thing is, you know, after high school, when you start college, the first 2 years of college is going over basic stuff again. So yes. You don't even really get the options till much later in your education to go on to what you would enjoy and what your interests are.
Okay. All right. We're about out of time. Like, people who already have their hands raised, we'll just go to them for now, or, like, we'll finish up with them.
I a little bit of tiny background. I have been to, during the standard 12 years, I was in 8 school systems. Parents moved. It's I don't know, uncomfortable to say this in front of a lot of people, but, you know, at the medical level, I am a genius. I top off standardized test scores. I top off intelligence scores. No, I don't get in the 200 ranges. I've met those people. They're interesting. But I cannot think, and I've thought very hard about it over the years, I cannot think of a single thing that my schools could have done that could have helped. I had 12 years of very competent teachers that tried very hard, and none of them in any way really helped me. I was never presented material or anything that was newer than what I was already playing with, was already interested in. One of the things that comes out of cognitive science is that there's an inverse relationship, and this is not some vague, fuzzy math. I mean, this is strongly demonstrable. There's an inverse relationship between the speed at which you mature emotionally and your intelligence. And it's simply because the smarter you are, the more complicated your mind is, the longer it takes for you to come to grips with what that means and for your ethics to develop, for you to understand the full extent of your ability to influence the world, which is ultimately what maturity is. The point at which, oh, I did that and it hurts, gives way to, I did that and it made someone feel bad and I don't really like that, to what can I do to help the world the most? This takes a long time to develop. You have 18-year-olds in the 150 IQ range in high school. You can treat these people as emotionally equivalent to about 14. They are given to outbursts. There's nothing the school system can do about it. You know, this is a problem that we have to deal with as a society, but it's not something I really think that we can deal with as a school system. What are you going to do? Make them stay in school longer? Hold them back a grade? That's the problem. They have too much power, you know, actual applicable power over the world because they are smart. And they don't have a strong enough peer group. I mean, the only really viable option is to round them all off and send them to schools together and keep them in school until they were 25. And then their standard education is over. But most of us will probably agree that we don't want to live in a world where that's how it's done because of the other side effects it would have on the structure of society. You would immediately enter into this ivory tower approach where people who had gone through this system end up running everything pretty much straight off the bat.
Yeah.
Now, that's getting a bit extreme. There are problems with the school system, but I can't think of anything that can be done about them. If you're talking, what do I do with the smart people? Minor point, and I'm really done. I'm not going to say anything else.
Okay.
There is a tendency in this discussion, every place it comes up, and in this room, to blur the lines between what do we do when we have identified an exceptionally intelligent individual in education to how do we judge the value of an individual as they're going through the system. It is the responsibility of the system to produce people that will contribute to society. There are several models of this. There's the Roman and the Greek model, which is most people basically refer to. The Greek is you teach everyone to be a good thinker, and as a side effect, you have a good society. The Roman is you teach everyone to be a good citizen, and as a side effect, you have a good society. I'm not proposing either one is the ideal, but we have to be careful when we discuss what do we do once we have found an exceptional individual? We do not blur it with how do we judge an individual's value, because this is where the multi-intelligence thing comes up. You know,
yes, you might be a very special person. It doesn't mean you can do calculus in your head. It doesn't mean you can run a 100-meter dash in 5 seconds. The school system has to handle both. It has to encourage a strong value system to get socialization of these children. But at the same time, it has to note exceptional people and decide what to do with them. And we have to be careful in discussions of this that we don't blur the issue, that we don't say, okay, I found special people, what do I do with them? And in dealing with these people differently, we assign them higher value.
Certainly. So it's just, we have to, so in other words, separate intelligence versus goodness.
In what you're, yes, in your approach to the system, you have to be very careful about that.
All right, great. Let's get some other, we'll finish up with the hands that have been raised for a while.
Basically, I went to a Montessori elementary school, and beyond that, we established this. By the time I was in fourth grade, I had already gone through 11 years of math on my own and learned almost all of it, and I still retain that, with the exception of my calculus class, because of the way the teacher teaches application. I have not learned, in all of my classes, I have not learned anything that I haven't been learning for the last 7 years. It's just getting retaught and retaught, and it's just being drilled into your head. So this idea of 12 years of standard education is really worthless, because you're only getting 5 or 6 years, and then everything's getting drilled into you repeatedly.
I mean, have we run out of ideas?
We have run out of ideas, because middle schools in Milwaukee, where I'm from, they don't even offer algebra until eighth grade. I had finished algebra by the time I was in second. I mean, I was ahead of everyone in my school, and no one could understand why. It's because I just clung to math and science. And that's still true. I cling to math and science. So everything else is boring, and I'm getting tired of things being drilled into my head that I already know.
So, okay. All right. Let's get the last few people over here that have had their hands raised. Do what? Oh, okay.
I just wanted to comment. Even those of you who may have left high school 2 years ago or may well be out of date, I don't want to be the defender of the school system, which is rank with problems. But
it has good spots, too, but go ahead.
My daughter began her training in computers at age 3. She's now age 4. Computers are making their way into the schools and will become part of the curriculum. My daughter started training at 3, but 4 years ago, the community adjacent to ours, the school board, voted not to have any computer training in the high school because they weren't convinced that computers had advanced to the stage where computer skills were of any use. So there's a dramatic change in a very short period of time. I also wanted to respond, as an professionally, I'm an interventionist, I wanted to respond to the comment about the violence. We have a number of violence programs which researchers have developed which are effective. The problem is they are very expensive to implement and very time-consuming. And if you talk to the teachers in the schools, they complain about not having enough time to teach the 3 R's. So it's very difficult to try and put this into the school system, and we'd like to think that violence prevention is actually the province of the parents.
Or you could also argue that that perhaps an intellectual education can't be separated from a moral education, just like this gentleman was saying earlier. So, all right.
I think we're emphasizing the evils of a public school system too much. I'm a senior in high school right now, and at my high school I've taken 3 programming languages. They offer 5 years of 4 languages, and I think while I could have gone a lot faster, I could have had a lot more fun. I mean, I don't really think there's that much of a problem with our school system. I've been taught critical thinking and programming. I've been able to take calculus and now, and even though I could have taken it 2 years earlier easily, I'm still being offered it, and I really don't think 2 years is too long to ask someone to go through the basics. If you're at the point where you want to go outside of the school system at an early age, you know, 14, 15, then go ahead, do it. But you can do it just as easily on your own with books, with your parents. You don't really need the state to intervene with you. And I think that the school systems are really as good as they need to be right now.
Okay. All right. I mean, obviously, when a Jeep has one tire out, we don't really say that the at least the three other tires are standing up. You know, it's just kind of human nature to always go after what's wrong with the schools. There are a lot of right things about the schools. The schools are doing a phenomenal job in some ways when they have to face a lot of the societal breakdown, the failures of marriage, communities, and so forth, which used to make up the bedrock of the schools. Sometimes the schools still are compensating for that. And, yeah, we do need to praise schools for what they do right. And but unfortunately, you know, it's not really human nature to do that. But, you know, maybe we need to change that. I'll leave you with this. If you're going to come to the Hacking 101 panel, keep these questions and these two questions in mind. Why hacking? And why schools? Think about that for the next few hours until you want to come to the Hacking 101 panel and also the 201 panel that's 10 o'clock tomorrow night. 7 o'clock tonight is also the Hacking 101 panel. Keep these in mind and be sure to maybe discuss these, and we can have probably as good a discussion as we have had here. Thanks a lot.